Venerable Sitadhara, for your introduction. Happy to opportunity to come for the second time here to the Anlach Buddhist temple for sharing with you the Dhamma. And I'd like to just see the hands of those who had been to my talk or retreat here that I was the last time I came several years ago. Just raise your hand if you had been there. And how many of you are basically first time you've come here and you came because you saw the notice in the newspaper or you have some interest to learn meditation? That seems almost half of those, half of you. I'm pleased that you have come here to, you know, because you have an interest in learning meditation. Now meditation is becoming very popular all over the world. I travel all over the world in many countries, and every time there's so many new persons who are hearing about meditation, the benefits of meditation, and wanting to learn meditation. Now there are very many different forms of meditation, but in the Buddhist practice, the form of mindfulness is one of the more popular of the popular types of meditation practice. And I just want to perhaps ease the anxiety as some of you haven't been to a Buddhist temple before to not, you know, be anxious or a little bit worried about all the, you know, sort of religious iconography that you might be seeing if you're not used to that. And the purpose of this program isn't to convert you to become Buddhists, and so, but basically to to try and to get a little bit of taste about what is the meaning behind meditation and what is the possibilities of developing meditation and how it can help you in your daily life. And especially the practice of mindfulness. The title of the talk is Mindfulness in Daily Life. And basically, the simple definition of mindfulness is it's self-defining, mindful. So what is the mind full of? It means what's in our mind at any one moment, from moment to moment. So it's a practice of learning to monitor your thoughts and your bodily actions and so on, kind of moment by moment. Of course, that's a very advanced level, but anyway, it's a training our mind to be more aware. You could call it awareness, practicing awareness. And basically, it means learning to live and be more grounded and centered in our body in the present moment. Because basically, from the meditative point of view, or the psychological point of view even. Basically, we live in this body. You might live in a house somewhere, but that's just where you know, keep your things and entertain people and sleep. But we live right within this body with its sense organs, nervous system, memory, and consciousness. But most people are not really grounded in themselves. They live too much in their head. And their body's doing one thing and their mind is doing another thing. You've all had that experience where you're walking along and totally lost in thought and almost bump into something, or even driving your car and realize, oh my God, you know, you almost get in a wreck. And so many instances like that our mind is all over the map. And it causes us to have a lot of accidents. And so being unmindful, mindfulness is a term to contrast unmindfulness. So you're unmindful, that means you're not really attentive and aware of what you're doing. And basically we're acting out of our impulses, because our body and mind is basically a conditioned organism. And even the modern scientists, doctors and all, you know, they're always confirming this this idea of conditionality. And so our nervous system is basically hardwired with its emotional reactions and just its various types of habits. You hear a sound and you look over there to look what it is, or you have an itch and you scratch, or you do your movements basically kind of unmindfully. In a kind of a vague way, you may be aware of what you're doing, but not in what we call a mindful way. Or the mind is a jump ahead of itself. The body is here and the mind is in the future. The mind is already at your destination. We're thinking about the future or the past. And so for most people, their minds are wandering between the past and the future. You remember something from the past, and then you project that into the future with maybe anxiety, fear, or greed, or lust, or so many, the whole gamut of type of emotions and mental reactions. The mind is continually shifting and moving between the past and the future. And that is what produces so much anxiety. And all problems are problems of the past and the future. If the mind is really just resting in the present moment, it has nothing to compare. It has nothing to remember. It has nothing to compare or judge or to get scared about or anything else or worry about, because this is all coming from the mind's ability to recognize things from the past with either greed or aversion or hatred or fear and project it into the future as well. And that is the underlying cause of so much anxiety, why most people are in a kind of a near continuous state of subtle anxiety, because of either not getting what one wants or the fear or worry of getting what one doesn't want. And most people's nervous systems are set on what I like to call the neurotic push into the future. It means, we're sitting here, but already you might start be thinking, what are you going to do when this is over? Or as the time goes on, looking at the clock, and the mind is already, your favorite program is going to be on TV, or, thank God the wedding's over with, But, or the NBA basketball game, I have to get in on time to see that. So, like that, the mind is never at rest. The mind is never comfortable and at rest in itself. And that's a state, basically, what the Buddha calls suffering. Why can't we be absolutely peaceful and content in the present moment and stay that way for as long as we want it? But the reason is, of course, because of our conditioning. And ever since we were born, we've been conditioned to react, especially with our likes and our dislikes, and this either desire to get what we want or the fear and anxiety of trying to avoid and scheme and plan to get away from the things we imagine are going to happen to us that we don't like. So the practice of mindfulness is a way of, it has different stages to it. And, of course, meditation is practiced in the beginning in kind of specific type of designated meditation periods is a kind of a training. But as you go on practicing mindfulness and awareness in the sitting posture and standing posture, and even while walking, which we'll be doing in the tomorrow and during the day, walking meditation, you learn to train yourself to be more attentive to the present moment and more relaxed and grounded in the body. So the first stage is learning to bring the mind back to the body. That's sort of stage one. So that the body and mind are operating together. They're in harmony. Oftentimes, the mind is not listening to the body because the body is having some problems and the mind is lost in its other problems. It's not listening. Maybe you're putting something bad into the body, and the body says, "Hey, don't put that into me." The mind's not listening because it's clinging to its other habits. Or, don't do that, don't do that, don't move so fast. We're not listening. So we do things even that it causes pain to this body, but we're not aware of it, or it goes unnoticed because we're not listening. So by learning to bring the mind to the body, you also get more connected with it. And the body is actually very user-friendly. But for most people, it's like a cold lump of lead, where it's got so many pains here and there, and to escape that, you escape into fantasy. But actually, the body can be very user-friendly if you give it some exercise, if you stop polluting it with various harmful substances, and so on, and learning how to just rest your mind and feel even the pulse of blood through your arteries and the breath going in and out and the other kind of subtle tingling sensation. Actually, it can become a very, very nice, pleasant place to hang out. You know, hang out in the body. So actually, you might say the first stage of the meditation in bringing the mind to the body is to have a, you know, in-body experience. So many people want to have out-of-the-body experience. They're fascinated with out-of-the-body experience. But actually, the Buddha wanted to have us to have an in-body experience. Instead of wanting to caress and hold other people's bodies, sit and hug and caress yourself. That doesn't mean physically, but it means just letting the mind really feel the life force that's bubbling and pulsing through your veins, and you can become very, it's very pleasant feeling. And then the mind is not thinking about the past and the future; it's resting in the present moment, like a car. Your gear shift in the neutral gear, and the engine's in a perfect idle. And it's just, you know, idling in a nice, perfect, nice sounding idle, like a cat purring, purring nicely. So the mind is sort of like that. The mind, you're able to bring the mind and rest it into the present moment of the body. It's sort of just like the engine in neutral gear, or the purring of a cat. And then, because the body is considered to be the gateway to the mind. Now, ultimately, of course, we want to be able to control our mind, to transform our negative thoughts to more wholesome, positive types of thoughts, and to let go of the anxiety, worry, and stress, negativity, anger, and other things that causes lots of problems. But the mind is not something easy we can control, as you all know. Because the mind operates deep within the nervous system. The mind, the subtle nerve impulses and neurons working between the body and the brain and the nervous system. And it's all happening on a very microscopic internal level. And so it's not easy to change our thoughts and change our habits. We get caught up in the habits. And you all know how hard it is to overcome your bad habits. It's easy to start bad habits, but very difficult to overcome them. You probably noticed that. And people are trying to overcome the bad habits, or change the way they think, change the way they speak and do things, stop using bad language, stop telling, bad jokes and other types of negative body language and things like that. These are habits we cultivate since we're young. And so they're hardwired within us. And so no type of external manipulation can really change them, at least in a permanent kind of way. Or not, at least not in an effective way. So the practice of mindfulness is designed. The Buddha designed and developed this practice of mindfulness as a, you could say, I like to call it a high-tech method for learning to transform one's nervous system and thoughts and habits to be more mellow and to be more harmonious within oneself and with the world around it. So as I mentioned, the practice of mindfulness, it starts by learning to be grounded in the present moment. And then you allow to feel the body. It's a gradual process, but when you're grounded and resting in the body, you have a better chance to observe your thoughts. Then you be mindful of various unpleasant sensations happening to the body, like maybe you observe an itch. Normally we have an itch and we just try to immediately get rid of it. But instead, in mindfulness practice, if an itch arises, you just feel, itching. There's an itch there. It's not going to kill me. You know, you kind of observe it. You see how it kind of builds up to a peak. You see the mind kind of wincing, you know, and you keep telling yourself, relax, it's impermanent. Then it wells up, it lasts 5 or 10 seconds and disappears. And you see that, you don't have to be pulled out of your center. You can learn to observe it because it's impermanent. And it just arises, wells up, lasts a little bit, causes some chain reactions in the mind and body, and then disappears. But you don't have to react to it. You can just learn to train yourself to observe it. And so this kind of self-observation, mindfulness is a kind of self-observation. And so first you just observe your body sitting. And even sometimes we use in the practice mental noting of just reminding yourself, sitting, kind of just watching the body sitting there as if you were kind of standing just behind it, looking at it, but not really as a visual, but it's just kind of a feeling. And the breathing is one of the common predominant type of object of concentration. So you watch the body just sitting and breathing. That's the present moment. So the first stage of mindfulness is bringing the mind into the body to the present moment and developing concentration, learning to use what I call the breathing body as your tethering post or your home base to try to just to continually remind yourself, just sitting, breathing, and to feel it, to develop this kind of sense of just watching. But then when the mind starts to get lost in a thought or some desire or anger arises in the mind, you can make an anger's arising now. Okay, let me not get uptight. Let's just watch this. And you kind of try to watch the anger arising in your mind and feel what it's doing in your body. Maybe you're clenching your jaw. Maybe you feel some tension somewhere in the body because of this anger, remembering something somebody did to you. And you just watch it. And you kind of, look at this, you know, and relax. And you kind of just see how this anger is a kind of a force or a power that wells up, affecting your body and your mind, but you allow it to come up and hold it within this mindfulness. And it also just comes to like a bubble coming to the surface of the pond, and then it kind of, if we don't react to it or identify with it, we just keep it at bay by just observing eyes, anger, and like a pressure cooker letting out the steam of a pressure cooker. It allows it to go off, and we won't do anything foolish or say or do anything or keep reinforcing the anger or the object of our anger in our mind. See, normally when we have something like anger, some reaction, we're angry at an object. But in mindfulness practice, we train ourselves to be mindful of the anger, not the object. So instead of looking at the object, I mean, of course, you know that the object is there, but you pay more attention to the anger itself. And while you're watching anger, the object becomes less important, and because you're not focusing on the object, the anger disappears. Because anger is normally associated with an object. But we focus on the object and not the anger. Or let's say the jealousy or the the lust or the greed or whatever sort of negative or strong mental state might be arising in your mind, you train yourself to try to just observe it. So these are just a few kind of instances or examples of what occurs in the practice of mindfulness. But also it means learning to be more relaxed and comfortable in the present moment, and it involves kind of, you know, trying to slow down a little bit and being mindful of your movements. So instead of just, if you feel an itch, kind of we just, you know, without any real mindfulness, we just move, real quick, jerky type of movements, you know. Instead of mindfully, if you hear a sound, you'd be aware of turning, you know, not being in a rush, just turning, looking, you know, in a relaxed way, and then turning back. You know, being in touch with yourself, being in touch, even though you're doing something, the mind is still more relaxed and centered in the present moment. And so in anything else you might do, you know, reaching out the arm, you know, a lot of people, they reach out quick and they might, you know, knock it over, for example, because they weren't mindful. But when you do things more mindfully and slowly and centered, then there's a real participation in the activity, in feeling the subtle kind of sensations or energy that's occurring in whatever activity that you're doing. And the mind is not so much focused on the present, but the future, but it's enjoying the present moment. And that is very, you know, blissful feeling. It's a very a happy kind of sensation, or at least it's non-stressful. Comfortable, and that can be, you can train yourself to learn how to try to be or move and live in your body more and more in that way as you cultivate the practice of mindfulness or of meditation. And, you know, nowadays, the practice of mindfulness is being used in many, even clinical settings. You know, they have a very popular movement that's occurring, is this mindfulness-based stress reduction. So in hospitals, you know, and basically they're teaching this kind of mindfulness practice to overcome stress. Why do people get stressed out? Because they're thinking too much in the past and the future. And they're allowing all these projections of theirs, which most of them never amount to anything, but the mind creates these kind of artificial or even false types of fears and anxieties out of stuff that never comes to pass. Because somehow it gets some satisfaction in dwelling on the past or dwelling in its anger, fear, or worrying. Some people thrive on worry. If they didn't worry, they wouldn't know what to do with themselves, because they're not in touch, they're not at rest and in touch with themselves. And so that's why learning to be more grounded and centered within oneself, and you know, so that you could actually just sit without needing to do anything. Now, most people are, they call us human beings, isn't it? But most people are human doings, because we're constantly doing. You're even asleep, the mind goes on doing, dreaming. And you're sitting around on a day off, Saturday or Sunday, when you wouldn't need anything to do, unless you're sleeping. But when you wake up, then, oh, you know, let me do this, let me, you know, go water the plants, and go listen to some music, let me call my friends, you know. We can't just sit there for hours and hours and enjoy just being in the present moment without doing, because we've lost that simplicity. And we're living outside of ourselves. So, and, you know, that could be all right. But what happens in all this doing and the need to be doing and active so that we feel more alive, we do things that wind up getting us into problems. Because normally we're dominated by desire or aversion in trying to satisfy our wishes or desires. And in doing that, we may use wrong speech, we may use wrong body language, we might do things that have painful consequences to ourselves, but also to affect a lot of other people around us. We get caught up in what is called the kamma, or karma. That means in our negative actions of body, speech, and mind, because we're unmindful and we just act on our impulses. We do and speak and think and say things that are offensive to others, or others take in the wrong way, or anyway, you all know that. And, you know, get into lots of problems. So mindfulness helps you to have a constant checking, monitoring yourself. Just as you have, you know, on your computer, your central panel or whatever they call that, you know, it monitors the various things going on in the computer. So like that, mindfulness is a kind of something in the back of the mind that's sort of monitoring or has an early warning detection system. Because it's kind of more plugged into your nervous system, it can observe when you're starting to get nervous, for example. You're starting to, you know, do some fidgeting around, or, you know, moving your toes, or, you know, moving, you know, these kind of nervous system things. So you can alert yourself, then you're nervous because there's something arising. And you can learn to then try to just observe and relax around it, and try not to allow it to build up, and to be able to relax again in the present moment. And especially our thoughts during the day, like the thought to tell a lie, or the thought to tell some deceit, or any conceited thoughts or angry thoughts. You see these thoughts before you've acted upon them. Because you can actually learn to observe your thoughts. Most people don't know how because they've never been trained. And that's why people are, you know, imprisoned actually in their thoughts. And you're thinking all these things and you can't control it. That's because you haven't been trained. But we can train the mind. But it's not easy. But it starts with the body. That's why we start by the body is always in the present moment. It's something very tangible. You know, it weighs 100 pounds or 120 pounds or 180 pounds or whatever, of flesh and bone, just sitting there. It's got all these things happening in it. Breathing, blood pulsing, various types of sensations. And so we start by just training ourselves to just observe those, and to learn how everything is constantly changing. And as we learn to stay in the body, as I've already mentioned, then we can observe our feelings as they're starting to arise, and our emotions as they're starting to arise, with more kind of detachment. Where it gives you at least at the cutting edge, it gives you a few split seconds to kind of, okay, I'm getting angry now, let me relax. Or there's a thought to tell a dirty joke in the mind, let me not do that. Or there's a thought to use some, you know, kind of indecent body language, you know, let me not do that. You know, something that you observe and you're aware of the consequences of your actions. Because once you've done something, you can't take it back. You say the wrong word to a person can wound a person, like insult them in a unmindful way. And then you have to live with the consequences of that for a long period of time. But had you been mindful of that impulse to want to do that particular thing, you could have said, okay, well, that's not very skillful. Let me let go of that. And instead, you would cultivate, instead of, like, for example, insulting somebody, compliment them on something. Or instead of telling a lie, tell the truth. Or instead of, smashing that mosquito or fly, try to, help it out of that puddle of water and, struggling, and then you feel good. So anyway, there's, lots of various ways in which mindfulness can help us to cultivate a more relaxed and peaceful state of the nervous system rather than this kind of a more neurotic or even aggressive type of vibrations that we find ourselves coming up. Or even your depression or other bad moods, you can learn to observe the mind and just know, well, this is just conditioned. It's not really me. This has been programmed in there, just like a computer program is programmed in many ways. All our various moods and emotions are also kind of just programmed. But because we reinforce them with our identification and with our unmindful repetition of them, of course, then they remain habits. But by being mindful and by kind of short-circuiting the nervous system, you can kind of reprogram some of those negative types of vibrations or unskillful type of behaviors. You can start to transform them or to reprogram the nervous system to be able to live in a more relaxed and mellow and friendly way. And of course, these are just some of the benefits of mindfulness on the practical level. But, of course, the Buddha's teaching is also a spiritual path, which, goes deeper than just trying to overcome a lot of our problems or to be so-called less neurotic or more happy. And so as your practice of mindfulness and meditation goes deeper, then you start to understand what you might call some kind of spiritual insights or at least deeper kind of insights into the nature of your own mind or the nature of consciousness and other types of spiritual truths or whatever you want to call it. So, and if any of you have studied the Buddhist teaching, of course, ultimately it can lead to, liberation from all forms of suffering. Actually, the practice of meditation comes out of the teachings of the Dhamma. Actually, this is a Buddhist temple, and you might, this Buddhism is a religion, but actually we refer to it as the Dhamma. The teachings of the Buddha are called Dhamma. And Dhamma, basically, you could say, means the laws of nature. Or on one level, it means the laws of nature. Or the laws of the nature of existence. What is this body and mind? But the Buddha was more interested in not how this world came to be, who created Earth, when it was created, or what's the limit of the solar system and all that. This kind of, he was more interested in what's the cause of suffering? How does suffering arise? Or to identify what is suffering and the cause of suffering and how the suffering can be overcome, and the way to actually live, think, and meditate that can allow us to unravel the mysteries of our nervous system and unravel all the knots and blockages in our nervous system that keep our body and mind in a contracted state or in a very mundane, just a revolving door kind of state, and to become free from that and to experience more expansive states of mind and consciousness. So like that, the practice of mindfulness can cover all of those different levels. You could say it works on the body, the mind, and even if you want to call it the spirit or the spiritual truth. So we incur a lot of physical suffering through our unmindful activities and through our unhealthy addictions to things and so on. So we have the physical pains we have to experience as pain and suffering. And then we have the mental things. The mental types of suffering we have to experience. And then we have to experience just being confused or, like a little individual floating out in the sea of the world, and little me in this big bad world out there, and all these things are happening to me, and the mind gets so overwhelmed and can get depressed. But that's what we call spiritual ignorance, and not realizing that ultimately your consciousness is you might say universal. And the feeling of an individual self or ego is basically an illusion created within the mind. And so that's, of course, the deeper levels of what are called insights. But in practicing meditation, you get glimpses of that as you develop your practice of mindfulness. And the mindfulness in the daily life, when we're busy doing things in our daily life, it's difficult to try to change ourselves, because when we're busy doing things, we get locked into the normal habit patterns. So first, you have to train yourself. It's like training. Like you have to train a dog. You get a wild dog, and he runs around the house and biting everything and grabbing everything and chewing on everything, and you have to spend countless hours and days and months trying to train retrain the dog. In a way, don't take it the wrong way, our mind is sort of like a wild dog. It goes around barking at people or at gets into things that are not its own business and causes anxiety to ourselves and even to others. I always wanted to get into other people's business and nose around, which has nothing to do with you. And then we wind up also accumulating unnecessarily problems and worries. So like that, we have to retrain our body and mind. So and not only the meditation, but the meditation is included within a larger system of body-mind training, which is in the included in the Four Noble Truths as the way to live, think, and meditate that will allow the body and mind to become more relaxed in the present moment, and not so neurotic, and to learn to purify its negative actions so that you don't have the consequences and the worry of somebody going to find out what I did, and the guilt, worry, remorse, and fear in our mind from having done, said things that would come back to haunt us. So it's to free the mind of guilt, worry, remorse, and fear, which is one of the biggest parts of people's mental suffering. But we have to understand the causes of that and how all that is cultivated. So we train ourselves in meditation by doing daily meditation, by practicing in kind of, you might say, a sterilized environment. But it's like riding a bicycle. When your child first learns to ride a bike, it has to have training wheels. And then you tell the child you just stay in the backyard. And then finally it strengthens its muscles and little by little gets more balance and awareness of things, and then it can ride out maybe into the front yard. And little by little, you take the training wheels off. Then you stay in the street. And eventually, he's able to, or she is able to, you know, go out onto the, you know, the sidewalks, and eventually even into the street, and, you know, dart through traffic to the horror of his mother. And, anyway, and but not perhaps get in a wreck. So, in the same way, we have to train ourselves in certain more conducive environments, train our body and mind to be mindful and practice mindfulness, like in these retreats and so on, where there's not so much kind of distractions. And as you learn to do it in periods of just regular meditation, then when you go out and start to go out onto the street and in your daily life, then you're able to, then the challenge is, of course, is integrating it into the daily life so that it will help you. Because your daily life is where you're creating your karma. It's where you're getting into your, you know, you're interacting with people and sudden news, sudden situations. You don't have time to really think too much about it. You have to have the skills to skillfully deal with whatever situations, bad news that may occur at any time, to be able to hear that, to understand the nature, but not to let it cause you to, you know, overreact or to get overly anxious or worried about something that you can't control in the first place, and that's no need to kind of fly off the handle. And just to learn to observe yourself and to be more relaxed so that you don't say, do, or something that is going to compound the problem or is at least going to cause you more stress and anxiety. And so to do that, there's also a practice of, and I'll be talking about this more tomorrow, but as part of the mindfulness in daily life, you train yourself to pause every now and again, or at least once an hour, or even every time you think of it, just to pause for 1 minute, or even just 30 seconds, or 15 seconds, and just to come to the body, and just to let go of the past and future, and try to refocus, recenter your mind, and in the present moment, and let go of whatever negative thoughts or neurotic kind of pushing into the future, and to relax that. You get regrounded, recentered in the present moment. And then carry on what you were doing, but you train yourself to do that as much as you can during the day for these short periods. And that helps you to infuse this sense of being, or call it the practice of being as opposed to doing, to break that doingness, just be for even the space of just one in and out breath for a little longer. So these are just the different aspects of the mindfulness of how it's integrated into the daily life. So over a longer period of time, you know, as you train the mind, but it also has to be something that's done all the time. It's like brushing your teeth or taking a bath. So you do that every day to keep the smell of the body away, so you're not offensive to others. Or maybe also for, you know, physical health, but for most people it's just not wanting to offend people by body odor or bad breath. So you keep cleaning that. But you have to do it every day, right? Because just the nature of the body is impermanent and it's always accumulating and emitting all these poisons and toxins and other things. So the same with our mind. The practice of meditation has to be given the same kind of priority. That the daily meditation is like the bath for the mind, or brushing your mind. That means letting go of your negative thoughts, letting go of your self-centered, conceited thoughts, learning how to come and touch base with this more quiet center of being that is there in sight. Because the original natural state of the mind is one of just awareness. Of this analogy of like the perfectly tuned engine just resting in idle. It's not going anywhere. You can rev up the engine, but the car doesn't go anywhere. So you could be sitting just resting in the moment of awareness. There could be all kind of chaos going around, but the mind's not going out to it because it realizes these things are not necessary for me to get involved in. And you can just listen to things coming and going around you without saying, oh, what is that? What is that? You know, going and getting into this person's business or that person's business. So, and knowing that everything is just impermanent and just to enjoy that resting in the present moment. So that's the real kind of benefit and the joy and the happiness that can come when one learns how to train the mind. But we have to know what the mind is. That's the problem. You know, we are born, and then when you get old enough to kind of start thinking, you know, you're 5 or 6 years old, and you know, what is this? How did I come here? Well, you know, what is this thing? The body and mind. Because we've never been taught what it is. At least not from the Dhamma point of view. Not from the point of the science of the mind. Actually, the Buddha was like a scientist. And as I mentioned before, he wasn't interested in who created the world, how the world was created. For him, the world is created in our mind. And it is. In a way. And what is the cause of, you know, our thoughts? How does this mind work? How does it get into difficulties? And so basically mindfulness is the beginning to develop insight and awareness into what this body and mind is and how it works and learning how to transform it so it operates and lives more in accordance with reality, in more harmony with the ways of the world, not dominated by greed, hatred, and delusion. And so mindfulness practice also, there's three elements of the mind. I'm going to talk about this more tomorrow, but the one is the mindfulness is the sort of basic beginning practice. But as you become more mindful and learn to rest more in the present moment, you become more concentrated. And then concentration, the ability to be not distracted by what's going on around you. And the more you're mindful, the more you can keep the mind letting go of distractions and keeping the mind more grounded and relaxed in the present moment. And it's like turning up the power of a microscope. And the longer you're able to rest the mind and on just one particular object of the meditation or just resting at it in the breathing in the body, you start to feel more and more subtle details and sensations of what is going on because you're not distracted. Like a scientist turning up the power of a microscope and looking down inside. As he turns the power up more and more, he sees more details of what's going on. And he can see how, you know, this molecule goes over and eats up that one, and this one goes over and does this to that one, and he's able to observe how a disease or a virus is kind of working, let's say, and then get some understanding about how to cure it. So in the same way, when we develop concentration through our practice of mindfulness, we become concentrated and focused in the present moment and letting it observe more deeply into the body and mind, we come to learn about it. Like the scientist gets his knowledge, his wisdom, through observing how things are working within the cell or the tissue. he can say, ah, this is how, this is the cure for cancer, or this is the cure for certain disease, because he's seen how it's working and how it's being caused. So in the same way, we do that in our own body and mind. We understand how we are causing ourselves suffering through our unmindful behavior and through our conditioned habits, and seeing how we can change them. That's the wisdom. So mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom, these are what are called the powers of the higher mind. Most people are locked in what we call lower mind. And pardon the expression, but the Buddha called it animal mind. And they don't know anything about any higher thing except for just the eat, sleep, and be merry, or I, me, and mine, and you know, be born, and get as much out of the world as you can, and die, or whatever, whatever kind of ideas a person may have. But they don't know much more about it. But there's a parallel universe called, you know, the parallel universe of awareness and wisdom that's going on at the same time, but we're unaware of it. So the practice of developing concentration, mindfulness, and wisdom tunes you in, or develops the latent powers of the higher mind, which are basically mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. And these are our allies in the fight against suffering. But we have to understand that suffering is being caused within ourselves. Sure, there's a lot of external causes and problems going on, but because we react to them in unskillful ways and we don't understand them, that we're recreating them within our own mind. And that we can't change the external world very easily or well, and we can't change others very easily, but we can change our reaction to the world and change our reactions to others and develop more kind of positive, harmonious thoughts, and to at least learn to be more live with less and less suffering in ourselves. And some of you might think, well, that's selfish. Or at least even a lot of people accuse meditators of being selfish. Oh, you just think about yourself. You just sit there for an hour and just don't want to, you know, observe your breath going in and out. What about all the suffering in the world? So a lot of people want to go out and change the world, get on all these other things, and that may be good, but if they're full of pollution in their own mind, they go out and try to do things, and it may even make things worse. So that, and if you eliminate your 2 cents worth of pollution to the pot of world pollution, let's say you have a big pot of stew, like the, you know, the world, the suffering of the world, all the problems of the world, and everyone throws their 2 cents in of greed, hatred, and delusion. Throw their 2 cents worth into the pot. But if we take ours out, that's 1 or 2% less in the pot, right? So that's how we help the world. By helping ourselves, we help the world. If you stop being so uptight and angry or anxious or negative or what else inside your other or to others, it will make others feel better. It will help others. So it's not a selfish practice. But we're doing it also to help others. Anyway, these are just kind of an overview of the whole aspect about the practice of mindfulness and how it is. You know, it's a training to be able to integrate it into our daily life, to minimize the various types of pain and suffering inflicted on ourselves as well as in others. So I think that might be enough for this Dhamma talk, because we still want to have a period of meditation and then a time for some questions afterward. So what we're going to do now is you can stand up and stretch your legs so that any building up of discomfort or pain in your legs can be relieved. And we'll do a couple minutes of some simple standing meditation and a few little exercises to help relieve any physical discomfort.